Welcome to Church 307, Wyoming's online church. It is another beautiful day on the plains of Wyoming. And fall is fast approaching, but not as fast as this episode is approaching you. Would you please hit the like, the subscribe, and the share to get the word out that this is happening? Because today we are going to have, it could be an active or a passive conversation. We're going to sparse it out. So with that, Grant,
hoot it.
Yep. Send it.
Sweet to see you. Gosh, you look good. And Mike, you look great too.
That intro was fire.
That was great.
That was good.
I think it's going to be active today.
Yeah. My name is Mike Wilson, and I am sitting here with Nick Rassi. If you watch our podcast often or listen to, you have heard from Nick Rassi before. He's been here to talk about youth ministry as a teacher.
Yes.
He is also a veteran. And today we're going to try to answer a difficult question about what is it for Christians to serve in the military. We're going to kind of start general, like, should Christians serve in the military? And then we're going to get more specific towards the end and ask some of the harder questions. Okay, so what does it look like for a Christian to serve in the military, and what are some steps that we should take in doing so? And so we hope that you'll walk the full journey with us all the way through to the end of this. I think there is a principle worth reflecting on today that I kind of want to begin with, and it's this idea that freedom requires sacrifice. And I don't know, we talk about sacrifice in the military. Do people still sacrifice in the military, or is that no? Now it's just a bunch of drones and nobody's actually sacrificing anything?
Yeah. So definitely sacrifice is a huge part of the military. Reflecting on that question, when you asked me that, definitely sacrifice is huge. Most people in the military, as you know, they will tell you they're not heroes. And I serve in the military. I'm not a hero. The people that are heroes are the ones that actually made the ultimate sacrifice. The people who lost their lives, gave their lives in the defense of our country. So I was asked when I was in the military to actually serve in Afghanistan, and I went there. The hardest days of my life were the days that we saw one of our fellow soldiers, one of our people in the military, actually lose their lives. And I didn't know anyone personally, but I definitely know people that were there when I was in country. I was a intelligence officer, and so my job was basically our C-130s, which are cargo planes. We would deliver supplies all over Afghanistan. We would deliver troops, we'd deliver beans, bullets, whatever, and we would get our missions every morning for our pilots to go fly. And they were told, okay, you're going to go fly to Kandahar, you're going to drop off this stuff. Most mornings, it was just a regular morning in Afghanistan. We're in the tent, we're getting ready for the day. We'd have clipboards, and we'd have each mission. So we'd have about 8 C-130s that would go flying that morning. And the toughest mornings, and I'm going to tear up even thinking about this, but we would get a clipboard that said HR. And that HR stood for human remains. And that meant that we had a service member who had lost their life somewhere in Afghanistan fighting, you know, on the front lines. In our C-130s, we were tasked with actually taking the casket with the flag, as you guys have seen on the news. We would actually load them up on our C-130s, and they would fly them out of country back to Germany and then ultimately back to the United States. And I remember those mornings, we would be getting ready, drinking coffee, you know, just everything was fine. And then we'd see that clipboard and we'd be like, oh, that's the mission we've got today. We've got to fly. And everyone would just get very solemn and very reflective and very quiet. And we would go about our business. But it was pretty much a day where people didn't say much.
Sure.
And I remember standing on the flight lines in Afghanistan and giving that salute to a soldier, people that I didn't even know, people in the military that I didn't know that paid that ultimate sacrifice. So when I think of sacrifice.
So sacrifice isn't just something that our forefathers did in the past. It's still happening today.
Yes.
And when we talk about freedom requiring sacrifice, I think that's a principle that's true in multiple levels. Unless people went before and sacrificed in the past, we don't have the freedoms that we have as a nation today in America or in other places around the world, similar conversation. I would say it also applies to parenting.
Uh-huh.
If we're not sacrificing for our kids and they're going to fight, and that would be a longer conversation, but they're going to fight for themselves and ultimately end up enslaved in one way or another in their lives. Jesus sacrificed for us on the cross so that we can have spiritual freedom. And so I think it's a principle that applies in many ways. Usually when people push back against the idea of military, they're using statements like, 1 Peter 3:9, don't repay evil for evil. And then there's the Romans 12 passage, vengeance is mine, says the Lord. And so there's a lot of passages. You get this story of Peter pulling out the sword to cut off the ear of the soldier. And people point to these and say, no, that is showing us that as Christians, we should not serve in the military. We should not fight back. We should turn the other cheek. And so what do you guys think? Do you think that these passages imply that we should not be serving in the military because that might require you to hurt somebody, to fight somebody, or are we taking those passages out of context when we say those things?
Go for it. All right. So obviously I serve in the military, and one of the things that when you join the military is you take that oath, and that oath has a lot of things in it. It talks about being willing to give your life, and people that go to the military in general, whether they're Christian or not, if they go in there and they are, I want to kill someone and I just want to go fight, the military actually screens guys and gals like that.
Oh, I'm sure they
usually
do.
Don't make it in the military.
Oh,
like
good.
That mindset is something where drill instructors and TIs and all that, they know it's like if someone comes in and they are off psychologically, that's a red flag. Nobody in the military should
that's good
want
to hear. I didn't know that.
Yeah, they actually do that. Yeah, and no one in the military should be wanting to take life or kill someone. And they teach right away at basic training, whether it's Air Force, Marines, that, violence is the last thing. It's part of it. I mean, it is part of the military. People will die and that's part of it. But that should not be the first thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. It makes sense if you're trying to build a cohesive team too, and that you wouldn't want people there who are just set on destruction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, so the passages I'm not sure about. This is a topic that I feel like I've been not really diving into, but just hearing more people talk about different perspectives.
Yeah.
And it's not even passages sometimes, but it's the history of the church in general and how much love did conquer like Rome, and love has conquered a huge part for the kingdom.
Yeah.
Like Rome, Christianity wasn't taken on as the religious, following or like the church because they were violent. It's because Constantine? I'm going to lose it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He just was amazed at the sacrifice and the love of the church.
Yeah.
I wouldn't go either way hard, I guess. I'm kind of really offensive or milquetoast on it.
I feel like the conversation for Christians has to come down to who is being harmed.
Sure.
And so if somebody is harming me, my Christian response is turn the other cheek. But if somebody else is being harmed, I have an obligation to go and defend, to help that person that is being harmed. And so it's kind of a service-minded way we answer this question. I will come in the defense to the defense of somebody else,
right?
But I will not come to my own defense.
Yeah, and there's so many, Nick would know more about this than me, but in the history of America and the battles we fought, like some would probably argue they were justified. Like you could say to stop Hitler,
right.
It was justified that young guys had to go fight in Europe. And then you could argue there's stuff in the Middle East that they would say was not justified. And I'm not, believe me.
You're not going to pick and choose.
I am not educated enough to, but like when you go to that, like you see the rally cry of a country to say this is for freedom. And then but sometimes the battle doesn't seem to have that same flavor.
We are blessed. And it's a tricky question. It's a tough question. We are blessed. Our military is a professional military. Our military, most countries around the world, they fear their military.
Mm-hmm.
You see that in places in Africa, you see that in places in Asia, because the military is not controlled. They're a wild animal off the chain and they hurt people. They can be used very inappropriately. Our military, anytime we have military action, that should be the last resort. You know, our Congress who declares war, our president who can authorize troops, they shouldn't be using the military for their own personal thing. It should be, we tried diplomatically, and yes, we need to step in because people are going to be hurt, and our military should be that justified use of force.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's a lot of gray here in determining, okay, how is the military acting? Is this a just way of acting, right, or is this in this particular circumstance? It's not an across the board, all war is bad and all war is good.
Right.
Obviously, I think we know that is all true. I think there's two principles at work here. So there's the principle of mercy and there's the principle of justice. And I think some, the pacifists, would hold up the principle of mercy as supreme, and those who are the other side would hold up the principle of justice. And I think there's gray here in saying that we operate in the principle of mercy sometimes and we operate in the principle of justice sometimes. And when it is somebody acting towards me in a harmful way, I should lean towards the side of the principle of mercy. But when it's somebody acting towards somebody else in a harmful way, I should lean more towards the principle of justice and allow that to work. I'd like to read a passage that I think will help guide this conversation in reflecting on the way Paul wrote this. Now, remember, he's writing this to the Church of Rome.
Okay.
So think of who his governor is, who is over it. This is not the reformed Rome that is now turned to Christ.
This is Nero. This is
the bad Rome. Yeah. And so Paul
Things are not going well.
No. And so Paul is writing to the church in Rome when he says this. And I'm going to read the Message version because it's pretty freaking cool. He says, "Be a good citizen. All governments are under God." And they're thinking, wait, Nero's under God?
Right.
How? Apparently God's not doing a good job of leading Nero, they're thinking, I'm assuming.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
"Insofar as there is peace and order, it's God's order. So live responsibly as a citizen. If you're irresponsible to the state, then you're irresponsible with God, and God will hold you responsible. Duly constituted authorities are only a threat if you're trying to get by with something. Decent citizens should have nothing to fear. Do you want to be on good terms with the government? Be a responsible citizen, and you'll get on just fine. The government working to your advantage. But if you're breaking the rules right and left, watch out. The police aren't there just to be admired for their uniforms. God also has an interest in keeping order, and he uses them to do it. That's why you must live responsibly, not just to avoid punishment, but also because it's right. It's the right way to live." The NIV says, "Yeah, I think it's one of those passages that's just so incredibly practical.
Yeah.
Like I can use that in my daily life, and it could be helpful. Because if God tells them to submit to the government of Rome, he's definitely going to say the same thing about our government."
Right.
Yeah.
I know we think our government's real bad, but it's definitely not Nero. We've got some things going.
I wonder if perspective has been lost a little.
A little bit.
A little bit.
Our government may be corrupt, but not that corrupt.
Yeah.
I like the NIV version of chapter 4. It says, "Rulers do not bear the sword for no reason." And I think it's just kind of working in a practical human reality. Like, we're not just going to waste our time on frivolous, pointless, like, there's got to be a point. Now, the problem is sometimes the point is a bad point. There's bad motivations. There's selfish motivations behind what rulers do. But he's just saying, listen, if they're going to take the time to raise the sword, if they're going to take the time to enforce something, they've got a reason for doing it. I think that a good military is doing its job when it is protecting the innocent from evil. And what you tell me about our military wanting to make sure that the people that join are not just doing it to go out and enjoy harming people, that gives me some encouragement in seeing how those decisions are made.
Is it too far of a stretch to say if we are supposed to abide by the laws of the land and the land has a military that we should follow the rulers, and if and
be part of that.
What do you do with military? Lawlessness?
Right.
You know, what
right.
do you do with someone if they're breaking into your house?
You love
you know,
them.
They're going to hurt
love
someone.
Love them, Nick. Give them a hug.
You let them you steal know? Everything.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a good question. Yeah.
What do you do with that lawlessness? You know, God is a God of mercy, but he's also a God of justice.
Right.
And as a Christian, you know, in the military, we want to make sure that we understand what our role is, you know, and that violence, that we're not just out randomly using violence. It's something that's got to be controlled. It's got to be something that's got to be tempered. Yeah.
I brought this mug a couple times, guys.
Yes. But now you get to talk about it.
Now I get to talk about it. I thought this was a perfect time.
Yeah.
Because our family visited the Alamo.
Mm-hmm.
So
San Antonio.
That's San Antonio Riverwalk.
And you've been everywhere lately.
What's that?
You've been everywhere lately. You've
oh,
been
yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. But so I will get this history wrong a little bit. But from my understanding, Mexico gifted the Alamo with a incredibly large cannon. When Mexico wanted it back, the Alamo didn't fight back. They just said, come and take it.
Yeah. We got a big cannon.
That's fine.
Yeah.
You guys can have it back. Just come and take it. Mm-hmm. So they're not being super aggressive. They're just saying, if you push us on to defend ourselves,
yeah,
we should do it.
I've so it's kind of the peace through strength idea. Like if you're really mighty,
yeah,
then you, and that Ronald Reagan, I don't know. I'm not going to get political,
yeah,
but
it's hard not to.
Sometimes I fear that the peace through strength mentality causes us to demonstrate strength at the peril of others so that we can show how strong we are.
Right.
And I think there is a certain category of person who just enjoys demonstrating that strength a little too much.
Yeah.
It's like they love, you know, that guy that kind of you can tell gets a little bit excited when they talk about how strong our military is. I'm like, at some point you take that too far. Now, I do think there's wisdom in the peace through strength idea, but I think when a military is working at its best, it is operating more as a police. What we think of as our local police officers who are trying to help people, who are trying to keep peace, that we're not so focused in shifting power structures in the world. Instead, we are helping people who need help. We're defending those who need to be defended, and standing up for those who need us to stand up.
So there, you, Nick, before you're talking about a Wayne Kyle.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Let me get into that. But think about David in the Old Testament, counting his armies, counting his horses. You know, he was told, don't do that. Trust in the Lord. And that was because of his arrogance.
Yes.
And that arrogance, we've got to be careful.
Yeah.
You know, there's got to be a pride in the military, which we have here in Wyoming. You see that in many parts of the United States, and it is a blessing, but not to get arrogant in our own might.
Yeah,
sure.
Absolutely.
So,
and recognize the purpose of that might. Why did God bless us with that? Because Paul even says that God uses the military to, God uses the military. Like somehow God's work, pulling the strings behind these things. God uses the military to protect the innocent.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, our culture is a little bit unique because we think of the military and the police as two different entities. Now, that's not true about a lot of history. That's not true about a lot of countries. Israel, I go to Israel, and there, the military is the police. I mean, it's not two different things. And so it's easier for them to recognize what is the purpose here. It is to protect innocent people.
Yes. So, yes, analogy. When you look at military and you look at that, there's a famous analogy. This is not something I came up with. This is a gentleman that came up with this analogy. But basically, there's three types of people in this world. There are the sheep, and obviously sheep are used in the Bible as an analogy all the time, but sheep are just the people. They go out, they live their lives, they don't want to harm anyone, they participate in society. That's most of the people in the world. The second group of people are the wolves. The wolves, of course, are people that are going to harm someone. They are going to take, they're going to steal, they're going to destroy. They are not following God. And then the third people that, in this analogy, I really like are the sheepdogs. The sheepdogs are the protectors. They are the ones that look over the flock. They are not the shepherd. They work for the shepherd. They're the ones that are in charge of taking care of the flock. And I've always seen myself in that role. You know, just even as a little kid, my dad said, you will protect your sisters. You're not going to go out and try and harm someone, but you are going to be a protector. Mm-hmm. And in the military, having to serve, you know, thinking about that, not getting that misunderstood, but understanding what the role of the sheepdog is.
Yeah. There's a story in Romans 3 where a Roman soldier comes to Paul and they have an interaction, and he's asking Paul for advice and he has some questions for Paul. And then at the end of it, Paul does not tell this guy, okay, here's the bottom line, stop serving in the military. That is not his advice for this Roman officer. His advice for this Roman officer, he says, I wrote it down. If I can find it, I wrote it down somewhere. Oh, he says, no harassment, no blackmail, and be content with your rations. That's his advice for this military guy. No harassment, no blackmail, and be content with your rations. And I feel like that advice, we could take that in today's military to determine, okay, what are my motivations? What am I in this for? How many in the military are doing this just for financial gain and for the gain of power? No harassment, no blackmail, and be content with your rations.
Yeah. Well, I like that because I think it is easy to forget that people have other callings. So like if I'm not called to be the protector, then I will maybe condemn you for being so protective. Mm-hmm. So you forget that it's easy to forget that God has put different things and desires inside of us.
Yeah.
And it's easy to condemn other people who just are opposite.
And there are Christians that will say they are conscientious objectors. And then the military will ask that question. They'll talk a lot about, you know, what does it look like to take life? I don't want to harm anyone. I don't want to take anyone's life. That being said, if that is necessary, that's something that, you know, I am prepared to do. And I've been asked that question by the military. Are you prepared to take life? You know, in the Air Force, I didn't see anything up close. We would drop bombs and, you know, we knew we were part of a system that was dropping bombs on Taliban and Al-Qaeda, people that were hurting other people. And I had to think about that a lot.
Yeah. Okay. And so when people raise the objection, well, you can't be a part of the military because they're doing things that are wrong, I don't think Paul so much is saying you can't be accountable to a military if there's anything wrong in the military. The reality is wherever money and power are present, there's going to be people misusing them. I think what Paul is saying is take care of yourself. You do what is right. You act correctly within a system that is broken, because all systems are. But from within that system, you do what is right. What about in a time, though, when that system is asking you to do something that in that instance, maybe you're generally okay with the military idea, but they're asking you to do something that you disagree with.
And that's actually a great thing about our military. So you are asked to follow orders, but you know this. What orders are you not supposed to follow? Anything that is immoral or unlawful. And they actually teach that.
Wow.
You know, so as a captain, when I was, you know, with the Air Force, if I commanded someone to go do something and it was illegal or immoral, the person who was getting that order did not have to follow it, and they would not be in trouble.
Wow.
Is it
hard to prove that?
You know, so like for me, I mean, I was Air Force, so I wasn't flying the aircraft dropping bombs, but they actually had to – you didn't send a pilot up there and they just randomly hit. You know, they pick the targets and they have to ask permission, and they've got – they actually have lawyers in the military that will sit there.
Well, they're just making calls.
And they're saying, okay, this is legal, this is not legal, and they actually evaluate those decisions very calculated.
So it probably wouldn't even get to you. By the time it passes through the order, it's already been determined if this is just or not.
Yeah.
By the time you even get
to
the order.
I mean, you think about like previous wars. You know, you think about like war atrocities and past wars and people doing things, and obviously that's not acceptable. And people will be held accountable, you know, as a soldier, as an airman, whatever. If you do something that's illegal, immoral, and you get caught, you're going to be held accountable to the UCMJ. Which is our military code that goes above and beyond our private laws that we have, or our government laws we have here.
Hmm.
I asked Grant before we started this episode, I said, what are your thoughts on this topic? He said, my main thought is, it seems like the military produces a lot of great leaders. And he listed off some of his favorite leaders and communicators and thinkers. And he's right. A lot of them are ex-military. Why do you think it is? Why does the military seem to produce those? I'm assuming it's because of
Think about service. You know, what values, you know, when you think about service, someone that's going to serve. You know, I want to live a life to the best of my ability that it's not get, but it's serve. I try and serve my teenagers in the classroom. I try and serve people in the community. And so that service-mindedness, that's where the military can excel.
Yeah. It's more than just a label. People say, I'm going to serve in the military. They're actually doing some serving. If you say you're going to serve in Congress...
You're serving.
It's a different definition of the word serve for many of them.
That's the argument I've heard for inscription. I think that the draft, basically. And my in-laws are in Germany, and they only got rid of their draft. I didn't realize this, like 15, 20, not that long ago. My father-in-law had to serve, and you either had to do military or you could do like a community-based type service, but it does seem to bring unity because you are serving your country and you're serving alongside your countrymen, and discipline, leadership. There's a lot of pros to being inside of something that is pushing you to be like the best version of you.
Good work ethic, teamwork.
Sure, that's not 100% true, but it seems to be true often.
Yeah.
I think.
Is there, what about branches of the military? You know, I don't even know. I couldn't tell you what branch does what, but can you kind of give advice? If somebody's watching this and they would say, I'm thinking about joining the military, is there one that you would say is more aligned and a better one, or how does that work?
So obviously I work with teenagers. I'm a high school teacher, and I definitely encourage anyone that wants to join the military to find someone that's a veteran that has served in the military, to go and meet with that person. You know, you meet with your recruiter, and recruiters are great, but they work for the military. They want to get people in. Most people that join the military, it's because I was Air Force, because my family was Air Force, or I'm Army because my family was Army. And so there's a lot of traditions there, which is a very good thing. That doesn't mean that if your parents are former Marines, you have to be Marine. You might want to go into the Air Force. You might want to go into the Navy. I don't know if there's one better, you know, in terms of...
Can you answer that without making a lot of people angry?
I mean, there's a lot of jokes we make in the military, you know. And so Air Force, you know, we call helicopters helicopters because they're helicopters, you know. Army, they think they're really tough, so they call them choppers. You know, the Navy... They're weird. They call them whirlybirds. I'm sorry, Navy guys. You're just weird. And, of course, the Marines, they just stand there and go, ooh, 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 as it flies by. You know, I don't know. I'm sure someone's going to get mad at me for saying that. But
that's awesome.
So
now there's the Space Force now, though.
Space Force. I don't know what that's all about. They're taking Air Force stuff. That's how I feel about that. They're taking Air Force domain and our stuff. And
because the space stuff was Air Force.
All was Air Force. Yeah, I was trained in satellites. All that belonged to us.
Okay.
So.
Wow.
Yeah. Strong opinion.
Yeah.
They took our stuff. We want it back. No.
I would probably join the Space Force just because.
I mean, it sounds great.
At least in my fantasies, I'd get to go to space. So. Yes.
Right.
Just like every pilot flies, you know, or everyone in the Air Force flies now. Yeah.
All of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's...
So.
Well, that's awesome. I really appreciate that. Thanks for helping us think through this. And it's one of those more obscure topics, but when you realize how applicable it is in the way we interpret a lot of these passages that talk about how do we interact with our governments and how do we respond to threats and those type of things. I think it's a conversation that Christians need to have and at least have an opinion on where they're going. It's not one that I feel super opinionated about or have strong thoughts on.
Well, and because of the area we live, most people would probably be pro-military and have a good Christian walk.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true everywhere inside.
Yeah, definitely was not true in the circles I grew up in.
So,
but here it is. Yeah.
Yeah. So, if like with anything, this topic always to me seems to keep an open mind and to approach people with grace and wanting to learn from them.
Yeah.
Not assume that you have the scripture and the ideas that are so solid you would get an argument or rude or I don't know.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, look at Nick. He's a saint.
I told you, the military produces the best leaders.
That's what I'm talking about.
Here he is.
Blank. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. So thanks for that. Thanks for continuing to lead the teens and everything you're doing for that.
All right. Well, thanks for having me. So I appreciate it.
Yeah. With that, I hope that you guys enjoyed it. And if you have more questions, I bet you could get in touch with Mike or it's kind of a fun topic. And as Americans, I think we all want freedom. And that's really...
But if you say that, you have to say America.
Oh, yeah. We want... Americans want freedom.
Yeah.
So yippee-ki-yay. You probably can't. Okay, but thank you for joining us today. Would you please like, subscribe, and share this, and especially if you have military people in your life. I don't know if they'd want to see this or not, but they might. I would... It's worth a shot. I would send it to them.
Yeah. They're like, hey, next time invite me on.
Right.
I'll tell you.
Like, I'll tell those guys, please, we're here to learn. We hope that you have a great and blessed rest of your week.
Absolutely. And as you go, know that Jesus loves you unconditionally and he died to give you new life.